Now, I want you to write these two words down because we're going to be talking about these today. What's missing in today's world? Remarkable boldness. Remarkable boldness. Okay, I'm going to get into action and I'm going to be remarkably bold, which means I have no fear. I am without fear. Caleb and I were talking about this last night. If you have fear, what if I told you I have fear? If you don't think building a $7 million building doesn't scare me to death, you've lost your mind. I have fear just like you do. Top people have fear just like you do. Guess what they do, though? They utilize the fear to activate the prey drive. Okay? Merriam-Webster would tell you that fear is an unpleasant emotion created by a belief that something's going to harm me in the future. I always joke and say, who died and made Merriam-Webster queen? Because here's the deal. What if I rewrote that definition and Coach Burke's definition of fear is a positive emotion that's absolutely necessary to activate one's drive? How many of you would believe that? How many of you under intense pressure come out fighting? Raise your hand, please. How many of you, when your back's against the wall, you perform better? How many of you, the mere thought of you going broke or losing something that you love will cause you to take an action? See, anytime I'm not motivated, you know what I think about? It's called mental subtraction. I pretend I have to sell this lodge. And I actually mentally pretend in my mind that I have to go to my wife and say, you know what? Our company's not performing at the level it needs to. We have to sell this lodge. The thought of that does what? Flips the switch. Psychologists call that mental subtraction. I take something that I love and I go, man, what if I had to give this up? It activates my drive. So is fear good or bad? Kelly, is fear good or bad? It's good. We need fear. My agent tried to get me to write this whole book about fear. And I said, no, I don't want it to be about fear. But fear is one of the number one activators of prey drive. So something has to activate inside of you to want to do this. How many of you, when you really feel rejected, that will activate your prey drive? So is rejection, the feeling of rejection, a good thing or a bad thing? See, when somebody really does you wrong and you have a lot of steam in the engine, should we be mad at them or should we thank them? When's the last time you went and did something big because just to show somebody else you could do it? So should we be mad or should we thank them? See, I am thankful for things that come along and get me stirred up because that activates my drive. I'm like, oh, you don't think I can do this? I'll show you I can do it. You don't believe we can do it? We will do it. You don't buy into what I'm talking about? I will show you. Thank you. I owe you. And I want you to remember this. When you feel hurt and you feel rejected and people say things about you and it doesn't work for you, I want you to learn to say, thank you. I owe you. And I want you to use that fuel to play at the next level. So let's go through the activators of prey drive. And I want you thinking, what is your number one activator of drive? Okay, remember the word activate means to initiate. How many of you know somebody right now that's very talented but lazy? See, when I was growing up, one of my cousins didn't have that great of an upbringing, and he never had any motivation. And I would go to my grandfather's house, who was a great philosopher. You know, those granddads have a lot of wisdom. He would say, grandson, are you in the motivation business? I said, yes, sir. He said, bet you can't motivate your cousin. And here's what I would say to him. Everybody is motivated by something. We just got to find that which motivates him. Get him in the right environment. Get him around the right people. See, right now, he's hanging around all the wrong people. He didn't have a good father figure to show him what to do. He didn't get in the right environments. How many of you have ever seen a person in the wrong environments underperform, and then you put them in the right environment, and they perform at a higher level with guidance, with leadership, with direction? Now, as a basketball coach, people would come to me and say, you don't want that girl. She's a troublemaker. She's going to end up in jail or pregnant. And they would say, don't take her. And I'd say, you let me worry about who I'm taking and who I'm not taking. All that girl needs is a good coach in her life. 4 years later, I would send that girl off to college on a 4-year scholarship. And I'd go back to that person who told me she wasn't any good. And I'd say, remember that girl you told me not to take? We're sending her off to college on a 4-year scholarship. Turned out to be one of the best kids I've ever coached. All she needed was somebody in her life who believed in her, who instilled discipline and work ethic, and who would not let her quit. Most of the kids I coached, the parents didn't pay attention to them. The mom didn't pay attention to them. The dad wasn't around. One girl had to come to school in the morning in a taxi cab. Do you know how embarrassing it is that your parents won't even bring you to school, that you got to ride in a taxi cab at 16 years old? Imagine the shame and guilt that young lady felt. I took her out and showed her how to drive in my own car in the parking lot because her mother and father wouldn't teach her. Okay? That's what kind of coach I was to those kids. That's why those kids ran through the wall for me. That's why they won championships for us. Okay? So I knew how to take a kid who was only going down the wrong way, turn their life around, and get them in the right direction. This is prey drive. So number one, what activates your drive is exposure. I see a bigger play. How many of y'all can go back to a time in your life? See, I grew up in a small town. Never went to a big city. Didn't get on an airplane until I was 16 years old. I remember when I started speaking, I went to New York City and I went to Chicago and I went to Los Angeles and I went to Miami. And the very first thing I said is, oh my gosh, look at all the opportunity in the world. There is no shortage of opportunity. There is no shortage of money. There is no shortage of anything. There is a shortage of courage. There's a shortage of follow-up. There's a shortage of prey drive. There is no shortage of opportunity. Last year, the American government pumped 40% more money into the American economy than any other time in the history of this country. You tell me there's a shortage of money. You tell me there's a shortage of money, come down to Nashville, Tennessee on a Friday night and let's see how much shortage there are. 500,000 people came to Nashville this past weekend. Okay, 70,000 of them paid $1,000 to $2,000 for Taylor Swift tickets. Then they ate. Then they stayed at $800 hotels. Oh, yeah, but we're in a shortage of money. Come on, folks. We're not in a shortage of anything. You may have a shortage of confidence. But anytime I hear people say it's hard to sell anything today, it's hard. Are we in a recession? Most likely. But there's still ways to generate income. Yes or no? What if I told you I started this business in the 08 recession? I was routinely signing six-figure contracts, $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 to coach people. You know why? Because they couldn't figure out how to make money. And you know what I gave them more than anything? Positive energy. Phyllis Moore, can I get an amen on that? They were paying me $200,000 to come in and keep people positive because they couldn't figure out how to sell a house. You know what they would say? Just infect our people with your enthusiasm. I'm like, that'll be $200,000. Great. Sign right here, please. And I walked out one day and I said, man, I never thought I'd see the day Dave Witcher people would pay money for positive energy. But in 2008, they couldn't find enough positive energy. Yes or no? I was doing an event at the CNN Center in Atlanta, Georgia one day. Kelly Eisler was there with me. I was signing books. And all day long, CNN was on the screens because it was at the CNN Center. One negative story after another. After two or three hours, I told my wife, I said, we're out of here. I'm done. I'm not going to stand here and watch this all day long. I'm not going to listen to it all day long. I'm not going to let my mind listen to it all day long. I'm not listening to the Crisis News Network. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to sign books on positivity while I'm here listening to this. See, I don't let my mind think about these things. I need to see a bigger future, and I need to move toward that future. So let me ask you a question. When's the last time you went to a conference where you were in a room with people who are doing what you want to do? When's the last time you hired a coach to coach you in an area that you knew you needed coaching in, and they helped you expand? When's the last time you were personally mentored by somebody who was operating at a much higher level than you? When is the last time you placed yourself in a position to thrive and get exposed to something? Do you know the number one reason I wanted to pay that money for my daughter to see Taylor Swift? I want my 10-year-old daughter to see a young lady who pursued her dreams. I want her to see somebody performing for 70,000 people. I want to open up her dreamer. You with me? And that's worth a lot more than a couple thousand dollars, folks. If my daughter walks out of there and comes home and tells me, Daddy, I want to do something big in the world. I have a dream. I want to do this. I'm like, best money I ever spent. Because I can tell my daughter all day long, have big dreams, do big things. I want her to see it. I could talk about building greatness factories, or I could build greatness factories. Okay? And that's the difference between a lot of people. So number one is, I need to see a bigger future. Like I said, I grew up in a small town. I wrote a book called Small Towns and Big Dreams. Where's Marcus at? Which one's Marcus? Marcus, that's you? You from my hometown? Woodbury, Tennessee? All right. So we got a young man here from my hometown of Woodbury, Tennessee. I grew up in Woodbury, Tennessee. And then I wrote a book called Small Towns and Big Dreams. And then I joke and say, here's the problem. Not everybody in a small town has a big dream. So we give that book away today. We don't sell a lot of copies of it. You know what I did? I donated like 10,000 copies to schools. And I said, give it to all the kids. Because if they dream bigger in one part of school, going to school to think bigger and dream bigger. Because we can't sell the book. Let's just give it away to people. Number two, activator prey drive. This is my number one activator, by the way. Fear of losing something. I was a basketball coach. I hated losing more than I like winning. See, you're going to see with me, I am what's called a defensive pessimist. A lot of people think that's a negative term. There's two types of people in the world. There's what's called strategic optimist. Alexander, these are people who show up and generally believe things are going to work out. This is my wife. My wife is a very strong faith-based person. I am too, but I am very pragmatic. I think about everything that could go wrong. This morning I showed up at this lodge and the weeds were not weed-eated and I had to come apart. I'm like, I want the weeds cut so when people come to the lodge, that it looks beautiful. I don't want weeds at the lodge. Like, I think about every single thing. See, a defensive pessimist goes through everything in their mind that could go wrong. You know what that causes them to do? Prepare, prepare, prepare. Think, think, think. Nick Saban is a defensive pessimist. See, there's no right or wrong. My wife generally believes, hey, let's show up. It's all going to work out. Strategic optimist. Defensive pessimist, like, man, what could go wrong here? See, I wake up in the morning and I go, okay, what if everything we built all goes away in one day? What takes years to build up could take seconds to tear down. Somebody needs to be on the phone. Somebody needs to be following up. Somebody needs to be thinking two steps ahead. See, I use fear as a positive emotion, not a negative emotion. Everybody see that? Most people, when they have fear, contract. I'm scared, so I start cutting everything. I got to cut. Big time people do not do this. Big time people, when they get scared, push. They expand. So I want you to think about what your standard MO is. When you get scared, what do? See all the real estate agents I coach right now saying it's hard to do deals? You shouldn't be sitting there freezing and doing nothing. You should be increasing your activity. You should be following up with your customers. You should be following up with your past clients. You should be on the phones more. You should be doing more social media. You should be pushing out and exerting more force and energy into the marketplace. When I'm scared, I push harder. Everybody with me? I don't just say, well, it's just the market. We're not going to sell anything because we're in a bad economy and it's the Fed's fault. It's the government's fault. It's the president's fault. I've made money with Democratic presidents and Republican presidents. Don't matter to me because guess what? They ain't the ones paying my bills, folks. So I don't care. I do care who's in office, but I do not be affected by them because they're not the ones paying my house payment. I am. So I never place my destiny in other people's hands. So fear is an activator of prey drive. Number three, competition is an activator of prey drive. Okay? When I wrote the book, Flip the Switch, Rory told me, he said, man, it's a tough week to launch a book. Books only come out at certain times, four times a year. When you write a major published book, it comes out and right at the beginning of the year, it comes out, you know, toward spring, summer, fall. It's only four times. And then you're competing versus all these other people. What if they're more famous than you? What if they have a bigger, what if they're on television and they're in front of 7 million people every week? See, that's who you're competing against to be in the top 10, top 20 on the Wall Street Journal. You with me? So Rory calls me and says, man, it's a tough week to launch a book because this person's launching and this person's launching. And he said, man, I said, good. Thank you. I needed that. See, that motivated me because I'm competitive and I hate losing more than I like winning. How many of you are competitive and want to be the best at what you do? Raise your hand, please. See, what if I told you I'm in competition with people that don't even know I'm in competition with them? How many of y'all would believe that? See, they'll tell me that this dude's doing this and this dude's doing this. And I love it when me and Tim Grover speak. Me and Tim Grover are really good friends. We talk about every week. That's Michael Jordan's coach. He's got 13 championship rings. And when he and I speak on the same stages, he may be in the morning, me in the afternoon, me in the vice versa. He'll come to me and, all right, he'll be like, game on, Bert. You know what I'll say? Thank you. I owe you. May the best man win. We'll see who the audience likes better at the end of the day. You with me? See, it's like a little friendly competition. Here's what he told me one day. He said, man, when I'm speaking with Bert, he always makes me better. When I know he's speaking and I'm speaking, I'm always on my A game because Bert pushes me. That's a compliment from a guy who coached Jordan. Yes or no? See, we call it some days he wins and some days I win. Some days he'll come to me and go, you got me. Some days I'll go to him and I go, you got me today. You with me? This is fun. How many of you think business is just sport? See, if you ever read Tillman Fertitta's books, he owns 600 restaurants. The billionaire out of Houston, Texas, owns the Houston Rockets. He said this one day in an interview. He said, man, I see business as sport. No different than hunting, no different than fishing, no different than athletics. I wake up every day and we try to win. And it's fun. It's not stressful. It's fun. And if you can ever change your mind about business, like this is a sport, man. Let's wake up and let's go play. Let's not get all tight and stressed out and freak out about it. Let's just have fun. When you hear me sell, I have fun selling. Can't wait to work with you. I'm excited to do business with you today. Here's what we're going to do. Here's the strategies we're going to use. And if they don't do business with me, I'm like, it's okay. I have made up my mind. It is their loss. Everybody with me? I've made up my mind that we're the prize. We're the buyers versus the sellers. Brandy, Lisa Galloway, you with me? We have something valuable that you need. And if you don't want it, it's okay. I will take it to somebody else. Phyllis Moore, you with me? I'm like, hey, I'll just take it to somebody else if you don't want it. So to me, competition is fun. Okay? Number four, embarrassment is an activator of prey drive. How many of you hate being embarrassed by something? See, those weeds embarrassed me this morning. And I almost got out there and picked them myself. If I had a little bit more time, I'd be like, you know what? I will go pull every weed in this lodge because I don't like being embarrassed. See, embarrassment is like, here's what I want you thinking. Here's the talk. We're the best at what we do. If you ask me what I try to instill in my team members, I try to instill a personal pride in them to want to be the best at what they do. Does everybody see this? See, I'm coaching all these real estate people right now that want me to coach their teams. And here's what they say. I can't get them to follow up. I can't make them follow up. I can't get them to do. We got all these leads and they won't work them. I'm like, you need to sell them on the best people in the world follow up. We are the best at what we do. We take a personal pride in this. Everybody see that? We don't mess around. We don't play around. We don't goof around. We are the best at what we do. And if you want to be the best at what you do, you follow up 7 to 15 touches. I'm not going to babysit you. I'm not going to beg you to do it. I'm only looking for people who have a drive to have personal excellence in their life. We call it touching the line. See, when we run sprints, some kids cheated when they ran sprints and they beat other kids because they wouldn't touch the line. See, my buddy Chuck McDowell calls it touching. So when one of my people on my team don't touch the line, I'm like, touch the line. Do it right the first time. This is a personal excellence in what you do. See, to me, I'm like, man, I'm embarrassed by our effort here today. I'm embarrassed by this. I don't want to tell people we're the best at what we do because I'll never be a hypocrite. If I go tell people my team does something, I want my team to do it. I do not want to stand on a stage and tell people we do something we don't do. Everybody hear that? And that doesn't mean we don't make mistakes. But if I say we go 7-15 touches, then we better go 7-15 touches. Okay. So this is a personal pride in what you do. It is embarrassment is an activator of prey drive. Number four. Number five. Environments. Now, this changed during the pandemic. How many of you think the country is better off with letting people work from home? Anybody? Okay, we got some people saying yes, some people saying no. All right? There's a lot of debate about this. I believe people need the environments to work in. I believe people need expectations. I can work at home in my pajamas, but let me tell you what, I'm not at my best when I'm in my pajamas. See, when I'm home and I work my home office, I go over and then I see my three-year-old son and he wants to play a little bit. And then I go over to the house and eat lunch. And then and the next thing you know, 2 hours are gone, unproductive. See, environments, I want you to think about the University of Alabama's locker room. I want you to think about working in a place that pushes you and challenges you and believes in you. And do you want to work in an environment where there's no expectation of you, or do you want to work in an environment where people are pushing you to be the best? See, when people come to work for me, I actually try to dissuade them from working for me. See, the first thing I say is, you don't want to work with me. You may think you want to work with me, but you don't really want to work with me. Because when you work with me, I'm going to push you and challenge you, and I'm never going to let you not touch the line, and it's going to be the hardest thing you've ever done. But it's going to be the most rewarding thing you've ever done. Now, if you want to be the best, then step over here and we'll talk about you working with me. We put out last week that we were interviewing people. Over 100 people applied for a job with me. The first week I put it out there. They go, oh, I want to go work with Coach Burke because he's Captain Positive. Let me let you in on a little secret. I'm not Captain Positive. Okay? I'm Captain Do It Right. That's what I am. Okay? I push because I believe in environments of expectation. Don't show up to me and halfway do something, okay? So when you think about this, how many of you believe this is something that's gone down the drains in the United States? Raise your hand. Folks, I could take you to other countries where there's not a piece of gum on the ground. I could take you to other countries where there is no trash on the floor. There is no toilet paper on the bathroom floor in bathrooms. It is spotless. And you come to the United States and there's trash everywhere, and I go into airports and people have thrown things on the floor, and it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. And I'm like, my mom didn't raise me like that. My mom raised me to follow up, to do what I'm supposed to do, clean up after myself, leave things better than I found them. That's how my mom raised me. I don't understand for all the men out there, okay? I don't understand when you go to a bathroom, you don't throw things on the floor. You throw it in the trash can. And you go to any airport in America and look at the bathrooms. It's terrible. Expectation is, I need to be in an environment where people push me. There is expectation. I want to work with the best. How many of you want to work with the best clients? Okay. And when you're building a team, see Dave's got a big team with FFL. Here's the thing I want to know. I want people to know, if you're going to work with me, then we're going to do this right, or we're not going to do it at all. Everybody see that? We're going to show up. We're going to do what we said we're going to do. We're going to say please and thank you, and we're going to be the best at what we do. Now, if that's for you, I call them the Navy SEALs. Step over here. If you don't want to do that, I call them the Baby SEALs. Step over here. Now, I want you to type in the chat box right now, out of these five things, what activates your prey drive the most? Okay? What activates your prey drive the most? Is it exposure, fear, competition? Is it embarrassment, or is it expectation? Meaning you're in an environment that is expecting something from you. Okay, look at what everybody's posting here. See, I want to teach you how to use negative emotions, fear, doubt, worry, as positive things. See, I'm reading Dan Pink's books right now, The Power of Regret. Here's what he says. Regret's not always a bad thing. We're taught to live our whole lives with no regrets. You really screw something up and regret it enough, you'll change. That's the whole argument of the book. Regret Bad decisions can cause you to make good decisions in the future. If you just examine, why did I do that? Like, I don't want to go through that again. I'm embarrassed by this. We've all done that. And it's like, man, we needed to make a dumb decision to start making good decisions. So the book is incredibly powerful because he makes this argument. Okay? So what we're trying to do here is get into the psychology. So if I work with JT every day, JT follows me on social media and sends me good messages. If I work with JT every day, people ask me, how do I know what activates a person's prey drive? I observe. I know my daughter's 10-year-old. My daughter is a competitor at 10 years old. So if I want to activate her prey drive, she's a gymnast, and I'll say, you know what? I think those other gymnasts are working harder than you are. Do you want to be a world-class gymnast, or do you want to be a pretty good gymnast? I'll say world-class gymnasts don't eat Cheetos. World-class gymnasts are practicing 3, 4, 5 hours a day. Do you want to be world-class, or do you just want to dabble with this? Everybody with me? That activates her prey drive. Competition, she wants to do it, and then she wants me to watch her doing it. So if you're studying the five love languages, affirmation, quality time are her top two love languages, and then activate her prey drive would be competition and embarrassment. Everybody see that? So I don't embarrass her. I just simply say to her, you're not performing at the level you're capable of performing at. Now, I'll spend as much money as you want me to spend to get you the best coaches in the world to be the best in the world if you're going to show up and do it right. But if you're going to dabble with it, I'm not doing it. If you're going to dabble with it, you can do it in the backyard. Everybody see this? So if I were coaching you, all the people who are watching this today, I would be sitting there going, okay, what is your primary activator of your prey drive? How do I get the most out of you? If you're a leader, you need to pay attention to what will activate a person's prey drive. Everybody on this call here today has got people on their team that are not playing at a level they're capable of playing at. And you can either accept it and go, well, that's just so-and-so, and he's lazy, and she don't pay attention, and they show up. That one always shows up late. See, you can allow this, or you, and by allowing it, you are encouraging it. Let me tell you what I did this week. I told my team, we turn in things at 7 o'clock on Sunday night. We turn them in every day at 12:30 and 4:30. I said, look, every time you're late, it's a $25 fine to charity. You turn it in at 12:05, it's $25. You turn in at 7:30 on Sunday night, I am not babysitting you. We're the best at what we do, and for God's sake, be a professional. I'm not getting you to do this because I do it. I'm getting you to do it because you're trying to be the best, and I'm one of your coaches. So there is a penalty. That is a consequence. There is no change of behavior where there's no consequence. Would y'all agree, yes or no? Where there's no consequence, there's no change of behavior. So it's like, okay, give as much money to charity as you want to. You want to turn in late 5 times? It's $125. Fine with me? But eventually, it'll get to the point where what? It's going to hurt enough for you to go, you know what? All I got to do is get this thing in on time. Yes or no? You run a restaurant, right? Got a gentleman here that runs a restaurant here in town called Steak and Shake. And there's a story behind Steak and Shake. When I won a championship, there was nowhere for me to go eat after I won a championship and nowhere to celebrate. So I took the gold basketball to the Steak and Shake. You ever seen a person walk in with a big gold championship basketball at Steak and Shake? And I set it down, and I hadn't eaten like 6 hours because I was in interviews. And I'm like, I'm hungry. I take one of them double steak burgers. But I guarantee if you allow your employees to be lazy, they'll be lazy. Yes or no? You allow them to show up late, they'll show up late. You allow them to halfway cook those burgers, they'll halfway cook those burgers. You allow them to do this, that's exactly what they'll do. What you allow them to do. So I'm not trying to make them do something. I'm trying to sell them on this is what the best people in the world do. Do you want to be one of the best in the world or not? That is a personal pride and activation of prey drive. Everybody with me? Okay. Now, how many of you perform better with a coach in your life pushing you like that? Raise your hand, please. See, I told Caleb, I've gotten back to the old Coach Burt. The old Coach Burt won championships. The old Coach Burt wears championship rings. The old Coach Burt wouldn't let people buy with things. The old Coach Burt would call people out when they gave him some BS excuse. The old Coach Burt said, no, 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 no. We're touching the line here. You're going to do it right. See, that's how I've gotten back to, and people have been responding to it so good because they're like, that's what I need. I need somebody to push me like that. Now, let's do an exercise right here called From A to B. Very important exercise, because when you're thinking about this concept, I want to draw something up on the board for you, and I want to show you. I do this exercise every single day. Okay? It's a mental tool. And it looks like this. So on the mental tool, I want you to think about this. So if you got a piece of paper, on one side of the piece of paper, I want you to draw an A. A is your current position in life. And everything you do not like about your current position. See, this is going to motivate you. So you go, well, I don't really like this, and I don't like this, and I don't like the amount of money I'm making, and I don't like this. This is current reality. Now, I'm a person that is grateful for where I am and what I have. But I'm also blissfully dissatisfied. Everybody with me? Because I know I can do more. So I don't live in frustration, and I did for a long time. I actually had a coach that coached me for 6 months, because one of the things I did a lot is I fantasized about where I could be in life. I have the gift of vivid visualization. I could see something way in the future. But then I would catastrophize when things didn't go as fast as I wanted them to. Everybody see what I'm talking about? So I could see it, and then when it didn't work the way I wanted to, man, I would just go to negative town. All the way to negative town. I ain't talking about like just barely walk in negative town. I would go all the way to negative town. And you say, how could a person so positive be negative? Because I was fantasizing and catastrophizing. See, now we did gene testing in our house where we looked at the genes of every single person in our house, my wife, our kids, and it shows in your genes which genes you inherited from your parents. And it can show you which broken genes you have, which shows you if you have an obsessive gene. And a person who has an obsessive or addictive gene can get addicted to almost anything. You with me? What if I told you my 10-year-old daughter can get fixated on one thing? And when she don't get it, go all the way to negative town. So let me tell you what real self-improvement is. Real self-improvement is I become aware that I go to negative town and that I'm triggered by certain things to go from fantasizing to catastrophizing. And instead of it being a negative thing, I have an awareness of it. I change my behavior. When I change my behavior because of my awareness, I now actually open up a new neural pathway in the brain. And over a period of time, it actually causes me to improve that behavior. That is real self-improvement. Everybody see that? If I never become aware of my behavior and my deepest habit of thinking, I never change that behavior. So something triggers you and you go off the deep end. Right? You wake up in the morning with anxiety. You have a deal fall through. There was a time in my life I didn't want to open my emails in the morning. You coach 2,000 people a month, you'd be shocked what people can do. You'd be shocked the things I hear in a day. Right, Kelly? Yes or no? You'd be shocked the excuses I hear from people. You'd be shocked, grown adults, what I hear in a day. Okay? And so I wake up in the morning, I'm like, man, I don't even want to look at my email. Y'all felt like that before? Because I don't want to listen to the excuses that people are going to give me today. And so I get this coach. He coaches me for 6 months. I recognize my problem. It's because I'm fantasizing on the weekends about how great it could be. It comes into Monday. It's not the way I want it to be. And I go to negative town. I'm triggered by certain things. I have an awareness. I change how my morning routine works out. I focus on certain things. Now I get my mind to a positive place. And instead of going to the sewer cycle with my thoughts, I go to the success cycle. Everybody with me? That's a change in my behavior. Okay. So A is kind of the things in life you don't like. B is the ideal life. It is the ideal outcome where life is clicking as close as it possibly can on as many cylinders as it possibly can. And you're like, this is awesome. Now, does this magically happen? No, it does not magically happen. Things have to happen to move from A to B. See, I'm here and I'm like, this ain't working the way it should. Let me give you some examples. Right now, I'm too involved in the sales cycle in my company. I'm generating over 3,000 leads every 90 days. I do not have a leads problem. Okay. Right now, I'm working on a conversion problem, which means I'm looking for skilled labor, highly skilled people who can get a person on the phone, locate their ambition, offer them to take an action. So I stay frustrated all the time because, like, what else do I have to do to generate more leads? I'm generating enough leads. I need skilled salespeople who can close deals. And when I have to get involved in closing deals, I'm like, why am I doing this? What else do you want me to do? Mow the yard? Or pull the weeds? I'm like, I'm driving the bus. I'm coaching the people. I'm selling it. I'm setting it up. I'm like, come on, let's get better here. So I got to get better at coaching my people and how to take a person who is interested in something to taking an action on something. Is that a skill? Yes or no? That doesn't magically happen, by the way. So I may put over here in my ideal world, I only do three things. I create content, I promote content, and I deliver content. In an ideal world, my sales team is closing $10 million a year without me. In an ideal world, I spend 90% of my time doing what I do best. In an ideal world. In an ideal world, I spend a minimum baseline with my kids every day. In an ideal world, once a month, me and my wife get 3 to 4 days just to ourselves to work on our marriage with no distraction. In an ideal world, I have 50 greatness factories and not one greatness factory that are highly profitable and highly enjoyable. In an ideal world, I wake up and I'm doing exactly what God put me on this earth to do, and I'm having a blast doing it. It's highly enjoyable and highly profitable. Everybody see that? See, to write the book, Flip the Switch, I study the subconscious mind at a much deeper level than I ever have in my life. And guess what I figured out about the brain? It's lazy. Your brain takes the path of least resistance. It'll always move toward a place of comfort. It'll never go the extra mile until you tell it to. It'll never produce what you want it to until you tell it exactly what you want it to do. Everybody hear me? Which is why you got to write it down and tell the brain, this is exactly what my life looks like. And isn't it amazing how people will show up in your life when you tell the brain what you need? Here's what I've been saying for a couple of years. I need a great operational person. I need a great operational person. And then God sent me Brian Neely, who's my new number two. Everybody with me? Who's coming in to help me with operations. I kept saying, I need somebody who can take things and execute them. Who can take this burden off of me. You with me? See, it's amazing. See, I would write all this up. I'd be on an airplane and I would literally draw all this up. Okay, I need a number two. I need salespeople who can close. I need this. I need this. I need this. This is what's keeping me from going from here to there. And the next thing you know, these people started showing up in my life. Because you know why? I was telling my brain, this is what I'm looking for. That's called the reticular activating system. It activates something in your brain. It's like, all right, I'm looking for these people. Then all of a sudden, I start seeing these people. That one could work. That one could work. Okay, so what I started doing is I started going, what is keeping me from getting here to here? Guess what? I asked most people what their B is. Guess what they can't do? They can't tell me. I'm like, what are you doing? Well, I'm just selling real estate. Okay, where is this going? What are you trying to do? So let me give you some examples of mine because you're going to do this exercise in just a second. Part of my B is my passive income is greater than my living expenses. Part of my B is my company is doing minimum of $10 million a year in sales. My coaching company. Part of my B is I only do three things every day that I love doing that I'm most qualified to do. Part of my B is when I get home at night, I'm not frustrated to give my wife and kids crumbs because of my work day. Part of my B is I'm a good father to my kids, right? Because growing up, I really didn't have a dad that was involved in my life early. See, part of my B is very clear. It is both tangible and intangible, meaning there's certain things I can't measure, but I can feel them. Everybody see that? It's like this is getting better. But if you don't tell the brain what it is you want, then the brain just wakes up every day and just says, okay, what's the easiest way I can do this? What's the easiest path? We go there in the mind before we go there in the body. All things are created twice, first mentally, then physically. If you don't go there in the mind, you never go there in the body. So if you study how you need to talk to yourself in the mornings, it needs to be precise. It needs to be powerful. I am a person of interest. I am creating $10 million of revenue. I am highly enjoyable. I am doing something highly enjoyable and highly profitable. I am the best in the world at what I do, which is activating prey drive inside of people. I am going to show up today because people have paid good money to see me show up and grow up and deliver. Okay? Because you may not have paid to come to this event, but you gave me your time. Yes or no? You gave me a day of your life. Okay? And that says something about you. That is the first step to getting in the game. It ain't the only step, but it's the first step. Okay? So when you think about this, you got to get real clear in what, and I'm writing a book on this called From A to B. It's going to be a real small book. It's going to be real powerful. And when you read it, you're going to get clarity. This is part of my coaching, helping you get clear. Okay? This is what I do. Now, why would I do it every single day? Why would I do this exercise every day? The more you write it down, the more you cement it in the mind, the more you tell the brain. Now, before we do this exercise, when I was 25 years old, I grew up going to Florida. When we started going to Florida, probably, I don't know, 18 years old, somewhere around there, we started going to Florida. And at first we went to Panama City Beach and these places. And I remember sitting on a beach one day because I was coaching basketball, and one of the boosters let me have his condo. This was the first lesson that I learned in not accepting gifts from boosters. Because as soon as he let me have his condo, he then expected his girlfriend's daughter to play more. So I eventually just quit accepting gifts from any of the boosters, because they'd want to give me money or give me things. And then there was always an expectation after that, after they gave me something. So this guy was a lawyer. He said, you know, go down to my condo in Florida, enjoy yourself. And so I guess I was probably 21, 22, maybe, because I was coaching them. And so I went down and, you know, used the dude's condo. And I remember sitting on a beach, and I went out there by myself on a yellow notepad, and I wrote down 10 things I wanted to do in the next 10 or 15 years. I wanted to have a place at the ocean. I wanted to write a best-selling book. I wanted to win a championship. There's always things I wanted to do, right? And fast forward 10 years later, I was moving houses from one house to another, and I hadn't looked at that piece of paper in 10 years, and I found that piece of paper. Guess what had happened? I had accomplished every single thing on that piece of paper. Isn't that crazy? I was like, are you kidding me? I only wrote it down one time. I told my brain I was going to do it. I didn't even look at it every day. And then I found it. And it's like, we did all these things. We'd won a championship. At that time, I had a condo on the ocean. I had written a book that sold a bunch of copies that wasn't a Wall Street Journal bestseller, but was a bestseller on Amazon. I'm like, it's crazy. Because I told the brain, this is where I'm going. So if you're a real estate agent, you may be like, look, man, I'm doing 48 deals a year. I'm doing 60 deals a year. I got a team of 50 people. I'm doing what I enjoy doing. I only really enjoy working with people who are listing houses. So I'm going to do nothing but list houses. I'm going to do this. I hate doing these three things. I'm going to bring somebody in to do that. See, in an ideal world, we got to activate now. We got to activate the prey drive to move this. You say, where does prey drive come into this? This actually activates the prey drive. Vision. Would you agree with that? And when you want this bad enough, guess what you're willing to do here in between? Whatever it takes. See, before we do this exercise, to write this book right here, I studied the top 20 motivational theories. I deconstructed those theories. I broke them down. I codified them. Guess what I found out, Erica? It's one reason people are motivated. Something they want. People move towards something they want. When you're hungry, you move toward food. When you're lonely, you move toward people. If you don't want something, you don't move towards something. You are not motivated to do something. Yes or no? See, I have a desire to be like my heroes, Covey, who sold 30 million books, to be an international thought leader, to be one of the top coaches in the world. That is a desire I have. So I wake up and I move toward that every day. Who can help me? Who can help me do this? Not how do I do it? That's the wrong question. The right question is who can help me move from A to B? Who's your who's? Okay? So let's stop right there and let's do this exercise. I want the studio audience to do it. I want the people who are watching online to do this exercise. And I want you to be vivid about this. All progress starts by telling the truth. It'll do you no good to lie to yourself about this or no good to lie to me about it, because I can't help you when you lie to me. Part of being coached is going, I am hungry, I am humble, and I am coachable. Coach me. Everybody with me? If you're going to argue with the coach every time the coach tells you something, then you don't need a coach. You just need to keep doing what you're doing and keep getting the results you're currently getting. But if you're tired of getting the results you're currently getting, then you need to say, I'm hungry, I'm humble, and I'm teachable. I came today for you to coach me, not to tell me what I want to hear, to tell me what I need to hear. Okay? So number one question is this. I want you to name your current A. Describe your current A. And then where you would like to be with your B. If there's anything in your life you are not satisfied right now, I want you to write it down. I don't like how this is working. I don't like how this is working. And it's not that you're a failure. It's just not working the way it should be working. So that's okay. First step is recognize. Second step is admit. Third step is do something about it. Fourth step is move on from it. Quit living there, for God's sakes. Let's do something. Let's get into movement. Okay. Number two, I want you to name one amateur habit that you are committed to leaving behind. See, what I try to instill in people is work ethic, personal pride, discipline, which is a derivative of the word disciple. Okay. I am disciplined to my future. Okay. That means leave your amateur desires behind. Okay. Number three, what is your primary activator of your prey drive? You need to know what it is. When we do our couples retreats, me and my wife do about 6 couples retreats a year. You'd be shocked when we do this exercise, when we say, what is your spouse's activator of prey drive? This is not their love language. We do love languages and we do prey drive activators. What activates your spouse? Because I can't tell you how many people come to me and say, Coach Burr, can you motivate my husband? He's got so much potential. And I'm like, we need to figure out his prey drive activator. That will motivate your husband. Okay? But I can't tell you, there are women that drag their husbands to that retreat. First thing they say is, he's got potential. Can you work with him? While he's sitting there beside of her. I'm like, look, he's got a prey drive activator. He wants something. Everybody wants something. Do you know what I want? I want to tell my wife what I want from her. All I want her to do sometimes is say, thank you for working so hard for our family. Women want security. Men want respect. And I said, if you'll just recognize how hard I work for us to have the life we have, that'll last me a long time. That'll put fuel in my tank. Thank you for working this hard. Okay. Is my wife here watching this? Sweetheart, are you here? Now, so when you think about this, what is your primary activator of your prey drive? Now, the last thing is this. You heard me mention because goals. Because goals. I like because goals better than finding your why. And let me tell you why. I can know my why. I hear people say this a lot. This is my why. This is my why. Okay. How do you get motivated every day? Because I feel like you can know your why and not be motivated. See, these are two different things. So I can know my purpose and wake up today and go, man, I've been doing this 31 years. I don't want to do this. Feel like doing this. I was going to a speaking engagement in San Antonio once, and I looked at the guy beside me and I said, man, I don't want to do this today. But because I committed to being the best at what I do, I'm going to go do it. And I got in that room that day, and those people were so grateful and so thankful and so hungry, and I had so much fun. And I got back in the car and I said, that's why I do this. See, I didn't feel like doing it. But because I committed, I'm going to show up and I'm going to grow up and I'm going to smile and I'm going to make it a great experience for these people. Everybody see that? That's intrinsic. Because Lisa Galloway selling insurance, she may say, look, I don't feel like selling insurance today. But because I believe in helping people, because I believe 70% of people are underinsured when it comes to life insurance, because this is a reason I'm doing this, even when I don't feel like doing it. What are your top three because goals? Okay. And when you know your because goals, when times get tough, when you don't feel like doing it, you buckle down and you fight through your feelings and you activate the prey drive. Okay. Question by Rob K. Bert, do you do what you do because you love it or you love the money? If you know me, and if you follow me, you would see how many things we do that have nothing to do with money. You'd see how many people we help that's got nothing to do with money. The business needs the money to employ people. The business needs the money to explode. The business needs the money to go national and international. The business needs the money. If you help enough people, you'll most likely always have enough money. And money will always, always chase you all the way to the bank. How many of y'all agree with that? So because that's a big reason, okay? Good question right there. All right. Okay. Caleb, how long are we taking right here? 5 minutes to do the exercise. Then we're going to come back and do some breakthroughs. So don't go anywhere. Keep your cameras on because I can see your smiling faces. Thank you for that. And then let's do the exercise. And then we're going to come back and we're going to share some breakthroughs. I'm going to call some people up. We're going to see your pretty face and we're going to let you share what was your biggest breakthrough of that session right there. We're having a great morning, guys. Thank you so much for showing up. Thank you. I owe you. Okay. Let's have a great day today. 5 minutes.